It's time for the Secrets of Staffing Success from Haley Marketing. Candid conversations with entrepreneurs and thought leaders in staffing and recruiting.
How do you guys differentiate yourselves from your competitors? Is ACA a threat or an opportunity for the staffing industry? How can the staffing industry improve the candidate experience? What will be keeping you up at night over the next 2 years?
And here's your host, Todd Lewandowski.
Welcome to another edition of the Secrets of Staffing Success. We have a really great episode coming up for you today. Before we get to that, though, just want to remind you, if you would like to subscribe to this podcast, you can do so on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and we are now on Spotify. So if you use any of those platforms, you can subscribe to our show there. And also, if you have an iPhone or an Apple device, you can use the podcast app that comes already pre-installed on your device. Just search for Secrets of Staffing Success there, and all the brand new episodes will be sent right to your phone. You can also find all our episodes on HaleyMarketing.com. Just look for the Secrets of Staffing Success section, and check us out on Twitter, at HaleyMarketing. Well, I've been waiting a long time for this one, as long as we've been doing this podcast, for this week's guest. He is the president, CEO, founder of our own Haley Marketing Group, David Cerns. David, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thanks, Todd. I got to tell you, being in this seat is a lot more nerve-wracking than listening as I drive place to place, and you do it with some of our clients, but I'm excited to be here.
Well, I purposely didn't give you a lot of the questions ahead of time because I want this to be spontaneous, and it's all stuff that I know you're an expert in, so I think we'll have some fun today. You know how we start this show. We like to give everybody the opportunity to give us their 60-second elevator pitch, so tell us, who is Haley Marketing?
Oh, man, you know I hate talking about us. I love teaching.
It's only marketing. 60 seconds. It's only
all right, 60 seconds. So, long story short, I grew up in the staffing industry. Watched salespeople struggling to find new ways to sell staffing services. Watched recruiters struggling to get people to respond to their ads. And watched mom and dad struggling to get the salespeople and recruiters to do what they wanted. So, Haley Marketing got started to try to help implement marketing into a staffing organization that really didn't believe that much in marketing. And our job was to make it easier for salespeople to sell, recruiters to recruit, and give them tools to be more productive. That was in 1993. Started doing that for mom and dad. 96, it became Haley Marketing Group as we tried to provide the services we were implementing for mom and dad to other staffing companies, as long as they didn't compete with mom and dad. And then, in the now, oh yeah. 21 years is 2017. In the 21 years since, we've really evolved. We've evolved as the staffing industry has evolved. In the beginning, we were a direct mail marketing company, and now that seems ancient. We started doing email marketing. One of our clients, you know, said, hey, how do we do regular marketing via email instead of direct mail? That led into doing websites, which led into doing SEO, which led into technology and building software like our job boards and our talent showcase. And in the last 8 years, the explosions happened in social media. You know, as we got addicted to our smartphones, our clients and their candidates got addicted to interacting with people via social media and via search engines. And so our company today, we're about making world-class marketing more affordable. We're about making it easier for people to sell and recruit. And, you know, we're still doing the same things we did in 1996. We're just doing them in new ways.
Well, that was 120 seconds, but we'll let it go. So that was good.
I can never talk short.
Well, you mentioned something in there about staffing firms that didn't believe in marketing. I think that's probably a good jumping off point for our conversation. What are some of the common misconceptions that the staffing industry has about marketing?
Well, I see this a lot. First is foremost is that they treat it as it's a cost. And I saw somebody on LinkedIn that posted something that I felt I had to reshare because it said marketing is free. Because if it works, there's a return on the investment. And if I said to you, I'll give you $10 for every dollar you give me, you'd probably reach into your pocket to find every dollar you could get. But a lot of people in staffing, and not just staffing, lots of industries, lots of small business owners, lots of even big corporations, they see marketing as a cost center. And when you look at it as just a cost, you're not thinking about that return on investment, and you tend to either do nothing or underinvest, or you become sort of mono-channel, where you're only doing one thing or you're doing two things, but you're not really building a strong marketing network, series of activities to bring in clients and candidates.
you know, if I said to you, you're going to be the president of staffing, you're going to be in charge of all the staffing firms all over the country. This is one of my favorite new questions to ask. What's the one thing you would make every staffing firm do when it comes to sales and marketing?
Oh, all I can think about is trying to manage all of those temps and no calls, no shows every single day. So giant bottle of Xanax for everybody on my staff. What's the one thing I would do if I was a president of staffing? I really would right now, I would focus on the candidate experience. As an industry, and this isn't everybody who's listening to the podcast, and this isn't a lot of our clients, but as an industry, we don't treat candidates that well. We complain that our clients treat temporary employees like commodities or like inventory, but then we do the same things to those people. We don't design a service process that's really friendly to them, that's easy to follow, that's easy to apply. We don't communicate with them as much as we should. We don't proactively help them manage their careers. We don't help them make as much money as they can make. Now, some companies do, but most do not. And when the industry doesn't, when we treat candidates like commodities, we create the perception that we don't care about people. We create the perception that we only work with lower caliber workers, and it damages our reputation with both the employer and the job seeker.
Yeah, this kind of comes up a lot on the show is, you know, what's the staffing industry doing wrong? What are the mistakes they were making? And I always say, you know, I don't want this to be a bash session of the staffing industry. But let me ask you this. Let's turn around the other thing. What's the staffing industry doing really well right now?
They're doing lots of things really well right now. I mean, I just love the evolution. If you look back in, I grew up in this business, so I can go back to I can't really remember the 1960s because I was too little, but the 1970s, the 1980s, the 1990s. And in the beginning days, it was educational. You taught people, we had to tell clients what a temp was. You had to teach employees what a temp was. And then it became very transactional. Hey, I've got a job, fill a job. And the business has gotten sophisticated, and it's really cool to see how it's evolved with technologies. And I know a lot of people don't like VMS and they don't love MSPs, but I love how our industry has matured to take on more responsibility for managing the workforce. We take more responsibility for safety. We take more responsibility for worker quality, for testing, background checks. We do a great job of helping to vet people way better than companies do on their own. I mean, I think we can do an even better job of helping our clients to be better at hiring, because a lot of employers still aren't very good. And I know a lot of times the HR people won't listen, but they still have a lot to learn. And I think the industry is more sophisticated about hiring practices than our clients are. And that's great for us. I think we do by and large, a good job of putting people to work. I mean, that's the core function of the industry, but we're putting 3 million people into jobs every single day. And, you know, you watch unions bash us and state legislatures bash us, and sometimes the federal labor, NLRB, come after the staffing industry. And we're playing a vital function in helping businesses be more productive, helping people find work that fits their schedule, fits their lifestyle, provides income that they desperately need, helping people find work they might not otherwise find. And we're doing that so right. And as an industry, we don't get enough credit.
Yeah, I agree. And that's something you and I have talked about before, about that, the idea of the power of work, that you're not just giving somebody a job. You're giving them a life. You're providing for their family. You're helping them provide for their families. And it kind of goes hand in hand with what you were talking about earlier about the candidate experience. You know, what more can we do to show candidates that, you know, this isn't just a job. We're not just handing you a paycheck. You know, this is, we're even not even just with candidates, with candidates and clients, to show them that, hey, this is more than just a job. This is a life for some people.
Well, one of my favorite stories that sort of fits with this was, I was at an executive forum, I don't know, 3-4 years ago, and a gentleman was on a panel speaking, and he was the CEO of a company, not a client of ours, but a company I have a lot of respect for, Signature Consultants. They're an IT staffing company, very big IT staffing company. And during the panel discussion, somebody asked the question, what's the secret of your success? And the gentleman who was the owner of this company said, look, I'm a medical doctor. I don't know anything about IT. I didn't know anything about staffing when I started this business. And he goes, basically, I was really stupid. And when we brought in contractors, temporary employees, I thought they were my employees, so I treated them that way from day one. Turned out that was my biggest competitive advantage. And I think, you know, what can we do different in the candidate experience is, how can we treat a temp like we treat an internal employee. How do we make them feel involved? They are our remote workforce. How do we make them feel connected so that they feel they truly are a part of our organization and they don't have the incentive to go look for four other staffing companies that can send them to work next week? What can we do to improve communication? Because if you look at all of the touch points that a candidate can have with us when they see the job, they apply on our website, they come in for an interview, they interact with a video interview or some online training, they go to a client site, they're all potential touch points. And as an industry, we're not doing enough to communicate frequently enough and in a way that's candidate first. How do I think about this individual and how I can help that person advance their career? And I know I may have 100 job orders to fill, but that's 100 people I'm putting to work. That's 100 people that I'm helping. How can I help those 100 people? And then I need to use technology or some sort of systems to deal with the 500 others that I may apply to a job right now that I can't help. And we can't just abandon them. We have to think about what else we can do for them, whether it's training on our website or sending them to other resources. So it's an good experience, even for the people we can't place.
What's the biggest reason that marketing fails?
Oh, boy.
or multiple reasons.
there really are multiple reasons. I would say the biggest reason marketing fails, it's a lack of commitment to it. So I can think about back in the early days, an executive recruiter out of Los Angeles called me and said, you know, I'm just getting my practice off the ground and I need you to write me a sales letter to win business. I said, sure, we can put together a campaign, a few steps and to touch people. And he goes, no, I just want one letter. And I said, let's think about this for a second. You're in a giant metropolitan area. You're going to reach out to people who don't know you. You've got probably in LA at least 500 other executive recruiters, maybe 1,000, maybe more that you're competing with. And you want some miraculous letter that's so good that every hiring authority will stop dead in their tracks and call you. I said, I don't know how to write that letter. I said, but I do know how to, with persistence and regular communication, make you stand out. I do know how we can get people's attention, but it's going to take more than one thing. And if I fast forward that today, we still get the same thing.
Yep.
You know, hey, can you design me an email I can blast out to bring in business? Well, no, I can't design you one email. Can I design you something that will get people's attention? One of the analogies I use in marketing is I tell people to think about it like a spider web. So if you think about one strand of a spider web, there's no strength to that. Anything can break it. But a spider catches flies by weaving an intricate web to catch things as they're going by, and that's your marketing. If your marketing is only sales calls, it's only social media, it's only your website, it's that one strand or two strands or three strands. But when you start weaving direct marketing, sales calls, social media, referral programs, email marketing, pay-per-click advertising, you weave all those things together and you think about strategically, how can I catch my clients where they're going? I'm going to get by that biggest mistake of I was going to say underinvesting, but really not putting the time, the effort into building that spider web that's going to catch people. So I think that's probably the biggest mistake. And the second part of lack of persistence is people will give up too early. So you've heard me reference it in the office. There's a favorite book called Think and Grow Rich. And there's a story in that book about a gentleman who was prospecting for gold. And he was digging and digging and digging and finding nothing. And finally, he gave up. He was exhausted. He was out of food. He was out of money. Gave up and went home. Somebody else came along and bought his claim. Continued the digging and found one of the richest veins in Western history 3 feet down. He had stopped just before hitting success. And I see that in marketing. It takes time for things to work. It's like that client you're trying to win over and you call and call and call. Well, there's been tons of sales studies that most salespeople will give up on calls in less than three no's. But it takes 6 to 9 touches to start to build a relationship. So that, just like that 3 feet from gold, what are we doing to be persistent in our marketing approach? And if you're just telling your salespeople, make more calls, they get burned out. It's hard to do that. So that's where marketing can fill in the gaps and people are not persistent enough with their marketing efforts.
I want to touch on something that kind of goes hand in hand with that too, and that's goal setting. Where do you see the fall off with goal setting with staffing firms? Just like you said, you had that client years ago who said, I just want a letter that's going to bring me more business. You know, that it's a tactic. It's not really a goal. Where do you see the biggest fall off with goal setting with staffing firms?
that they don't do it.
Right. Or do it properly.
I don't mean to be sarcastic. No, I don't want to bash the industry at all, because one of the things, I do a lot of our marketing strategy work, and we send out a workbook at the beginning of the process, and the very first question is, what's your mission? Mm. You'd be amazed at the percentage of times that comes back with either nothing filled in or a mission that's internally focused about how big a company I want to grow. Well, that's not a very inspiring mission, but I'll get to that later. The second question is, tell us your top three objectives for the next 1 to 3 years. Very often, those goals are vague. You know, we've talked about SMART objectives here and goal setting. So there's no specific measurement of success. There's no time period for achieving. There's goals like, I want to increase sales. And I'll ask somebody, by how much? We haven't defined that. I want to increase my business by 50%. By when? Well, I'm not sure. Mm. So when it comes to goal setting, people, sort of that persistence, they don't do it all the way through to build that SMART goal. So they know what they want to accomplish, when they want to accomplish, so that they can then create strategies to realize those goals. Now, the other thing, we see this, and it tends to happen with smaller businesses more than larger ones, they just don't set goals. Mm. So they'll invest in a program, and sometimes they'll invest in a program with us, and it's more like a wish. They don't know what they want to accomplish, or they'll have a belief like, I need social media.
Right.
But it's not towards any goal. It's just because I see everybody on social media, so I need social media. Well, that's not a good reason to do it.
When you talk about marketing firms, and I don't mean this to be an opportunity to sell Haley Marketing here, but we do come across this quite a bit. You know, what's the value of hiring an outside marketing firm like Haley Marketing versus hiring one person internally to take care of all their marketing? I think that's what we come up against a lot in this industry.
So this is when you transition to the commercial for me.
This is it.
No, the value of a marketing firm is, there's many different potential values. So if you're a small company, it adds resources you don't have. Yeah. If you've got an internal marketing team, it also can add resources you don't have, because one person can't be good at everything. And I think that's one of the things that's overlooked in marketing. I've talked to a lot of mid-size staffing companies that are trying to build marketing departments. They've asked me to help them review their job descriptions and figure out what to pay people. And one of the challenges they run into is that there's nobody in marketing who's good at everything in marketing anymore. Mm. When I started in marketing, you know, you didn't have to know that much. You had to understand a little bit about design. I knew a little bit because I'm not a designer. Mm-hmm. You had to know a little bit about direct marketing strategy, which I learned a lot about just by reading some very good books. And you didn't need to know a ton else. Yeah. Today, I need to know direct marketing, email marketing, social media marketing, search engine optimization, website development, pay-per-click advertising, AdWords, doing pay-per-click on social, there's just so many different topics. Yeah. I can't keep up. And we've grown, you know, just in the last few years, we've gone from 15 people to 43 people.
Yeah.
So that's happened as we've had to add people who have expertise that no one person can have. So a value of a firm is to bring in that diversity of expertise and those additional resources. In the case of an industry specialist, insert plug here.
Yeah.
In case of an industry specialist, and I don't want to make this a sales pitch for Haley, but any industry specialist, they can see things that you don't see because they're working with other companies like yours, or they can see things that you do that you should focus on. And to explain that more fully, you know, when we ask clients, what makes you different? And I've heard you talk about this in the podcast. Mm-hmm. You know, it's so often, it's our service, it's our quality of our candidates. And there's nothing wrong with that belief. Right. But if there's 20 or 30 or 50 or 100 staffing companies in your market selling to the same HR managers, all saying it's our service, it's our quality, that message gets lost. Yeah. And so a non-specialized marketing firm is going to hear you talk about quality and service and really latch on to that and say, okay, that's a great differentiator. An industry specialist is going to say, wait, if we just go with that, you sound like everybody else.
Yeah.
And so I can tell you what 10, 20, 50 other companies are doing to break down quality, break down service. I can look at your list of potential differentiators and say, you know, these ones are places you can hang your hat to really make a difference. And that, you know, that's where a specialist, that's where a marketing agency can add a lot of value, not just the technical expertise, but understanding the nuances of your industry and to help you figure out where to focus.
You mentioned
the growth of our staff. And it leads me perfectly into my next question. It is, you know, probably the number one recurring topic of conversation on this podcast has been the inability to find good quality candidates over the past couple of years right now in the staffing industry. We've had a pretty decent track record here internally at Haley Marketing. If we go back 15 years to a certain someone that you hired, but I won't name any names here.
I'm not listening.
What have been some of your secrets to finding great people for our team?
Well, as everybody knows, recruiting's never easy. I will say, and this benefits us more so than a lot of podcast listeners, there's a benefit. We're not in a market. We're from Buffalo, New York. So we're not in a market where we're the hot up and coming place to be. That actually is an advantage because there's some great talent here, but there aren't as many great jobs. And so if you can create a great job, you can create a great place to work. That makes a difference. I know Dan Campbell at Higher Dynamics. Now they're in Atlanta. They're in a big market. He's always focused on being a best place to work for staffing professionals and creating a culture that is about being a great place to work. And if you think about recruiting, you know, if you read a lot of the recruiting consultants, they're all talking about recruiting as marketing. Well, marketing is a lot easier when you have a great product to market. So what is the job you're marketing? Is your pay rate the same as everybody else? Are your benefits the same? Do you have a good work from home policies? How do you treat people differently than everybody else? Because if you can be the best job, not just for a recruiter or a staffing coordinator, but the best job for the demographic that you're trying to attract in your marketplace, whether they're, you know, here in Buffalo, so they're working at Geico, they're working at KeyBank, they're working at M&T Bank. I mean, those are some of the, they're working in the medical corridor. You think about where those people are working. Why are they going to leave? Well, they're going to leave those more premier companies to go to a different firm, a smaller firm, because they perceive you offer something they can't get. And that they can't get can be pay. But more often than not, it's how they're treated. It could be an opportunity for professional advancement. It could be how their opinions are respected. It could be just having a fun culture. And it's probably a mix of all those things. So our recruiting usually is to think about first the culture and being a great place to work and trying to make the jobs as fun but professional as they can, trying to provide opportunities for development, then marketing that product. We've worked with staffing and recruiting firms when we are having a hard time finding, like when we go tech, we need help. So we're not going to attract it just by having a great culture. But having that story to tell enables us to attract candidates who might be at a larger firm. It enables our recruiters to be more successful than if we didn't have that advantage.
We're going to take a real quick break here on Secrets of Staffing Success. When we get back, we're going to let the staff ask some questions of David. It's all coming up. Stick around.
Hi, this is Brad Smith, Director of SEO and Social Media here at Haley Marketing Group. If you're like most staffing companies, you might be having a challenge with recruiting. You probably spend tens of thousands of dollars on recruitment marketing, all to drive candidates to your website. But what happens if they don't apply the first time? We did a research study and found that candidates coming back to your website a second, third, or fourth time are 2 to 3 times more likely to apply for a position than first-time visitors. With Haley Marketing's re-recruiting program, we tag visitors to your website and continually show them ads to get them back to your website and drive more applications, drive more conversions, and make those recruiting dollars more effective. For more information about re-recruiting, contact us today at 888-696-2900.
We're back with the Secrets of Staffing Success. We're talking with David Cerns, our CEO and president here at Haley Marketing Group. All right, so I let the staff ask some questions here. I open it up to everybody. You haven't seen these. I didn't put any limitations on what they could ask. Any topic was good. And I got to tell you, we've got some really good potential interviewers here. I think my job as a host here is in jeopardy because they came up with some really good questions. So
they do know the annual reviews are coming up in just a few weeks, right?
Yeah, they're all pretty safe questions. Don't worry about that. Let's see. Let's start with 22 years ago. We talked about Haley Marketing starting. Where did you see yourself at this point in your life?
Oh, phenomenal question.
Well,
I actually gonna go back a little bit further. So I knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur. My MBA is in entrepreneurial management. So I knew I wanted to be in business for myself. My undergraduate degree was in IT. So my wife and I, as soon as I got out of graduate school, and before it was my wife and I, it was fiance and I, started a software company. And my dad likes to tell me, that's where you got your real MBA. I didn't envision at all that I'd be living on $10,000 a year when most of my friends out of graduate school were making 10 times that amount. But you learn a lot from those struggles. And I never studied marketing, but I had to learn a lot. I had to read a ton. And so when we went to launch Haley Marketing Group, my initial vision was we were going to fill a niche that didn't really get well filled. There were a couple of other companies that provided marketing support to the industry at that time, but they weren't doing a great job providing engaging, intelligent content. And we were going to be, they didn't call it content marketing then, but we were going to be the content leaders. That was the vision in 1996 when we're going to try to create this company that will become the dominant marketing player for small to mid-sized staffing companies. I honestly, I don't even think I envisioned that we'd be at 43 people today, that we'd be running a business with almost 1,200 clients, that we'd serve people on, I think, four or five different continents right now. Really cool stuff. Now, as I look forward to saying what's next, and it's saying, where, you know, where can the future go? So 22 years ago, I didn't envision that. But today I see lots more potential than I saw when I was young and naive and just wanting to knock off the two competitors who were there.
You mentioned your wife. Somebody did ask a question. This does come up a lot in the staffing industry. There's a lot of husband and wife, brother and sister ownership teams in staffing. What tips do you have for working with your wife?
Well, it's been a great relationship from a business and personal standpoint. And a lot of people wonder, like, how the hell do you guys get up in the morning, work together all day long, have lunch together every single day, go home, hang around with one another, go to bed, and then repeat the next day? And for us, we sort of couldn't imagine it any other way. But you see it. We have really different functions. We have different personalities. We have different strengths. I'm the one who goes to, you know, 12, 13 of the 17 conferences we do a year. And ironically, I'm not really good at that, but I'm the one who does that. She hates it. She would rather be home. And she is so good at operations and process and procedure that the most dramatic turn in our business came when she went from just managing our technology to becoming our COO and said, I'm going to redesign how we run process. And it made a huge impact in the quality of our service, in the satisfaction of our clients, in our ability to handle the work we were bringing in. It's an ongoing challenge. You know, there's always room for improvement. But for any husband and wife team, I mean, having that separation of interests, I do the marketing. I work with our writers. Vicky does the technology. She works with our project manager. She works on process. And then we compare notes. You know, we had a strategic consultant come to talk to our business, and he was amazed that every single month, the second Friday of every single month, we take the entire day off, not to go have fun, but usually we sit in the local coffee shop and we talk about the strategy of the business together and we compare notes because we don't see what the other person's doing day in and day out. And that helps us make sure we've got alignment across all areas of the organization on what are the big goals. And so people working together, you know, it's the best thing in the world. But you just, you want to have complementary strengths.
If you weren't in marketing, what would you be doing? Or let me say marketing slash entrepreneur.
Yeah, it's hard to think about that now, but I'm, you know, my toilet training was in technology. You know, when I got started in the staffing industry, I was in high school and my mom and dad were building the first computer system for their business. There was no software. You know, there wasn't a Bullhorn or an Evianti or any of the other ATSs out in the marketplace. None of it existed in the late 70s. So they were building their own software to automate their business. That's where I got started. I started working with their CIO. I don't know what is just probably data processing manager was the title at that time.
Punch card manager.
Not quite that bad.
Okay.
But their CIO developing software to run the business. And I learned a lot about software and I went to college to learn how to do that. And I started a software company that fell on its butt, but I'd be in technology. And, you know, even as Haley Marketing Group evolves, I'm sort of coming back to my roots, getting more and more involved in how we become more technical as we grow. So if we had to take marketing out of the mix, I'd be somewhat lost. But I'd definitely be technology related.
This one is more back to our previous conversation. Why is it better to target a well-defined niche versus a whole vertical? General staffing versus, you know, IT staffing or industrial staffing.
Well, it's sort of the small fish in a big pond, big fish in a small pond analogy. If you want to dominate your market. You want to be the big fish. You either have to be really, really big, or you have to reduce the size of your pond. So if I'm in a very small pond, I can be the only player, one of a few. I remember we met a company that did staffing for oncology technicians. And I didn't even know what that meant at the time. And essentially they said, well, it's mostly radiation therapy technicians for people with cancer. Mm. They were a small three-person company, but they were the biggest player at the time in the United States in that specialty. They were the big fish in an incredibly small pond, but for them, they ran a profitable business. Now, if they had tried to be travel nursing, which is a huge pond, they would be such a tiny fish that they would have to live on scraps. Yeah. And when you're the small fish, you're much more likely to be bullied by the bigger ones, have to live on lower margins, or figure out where the big fish isn't good and focus on that type of customer. But then again, you're specializing if you do that.
Yeah. I love this next question. As you look back 5, 10, even 20 years ago, what were some of the biggest surprises or unexpected changes you've seen in the staffing industry?
Well, I was going to say in you, I'm thinking my hair fell out that badly. Biggest surprises in the staffing industry. One of my biggest surprises is the sales model hasn't evolved more. That we can still have people doing drop-by cold calls, and we still have people giving advice. You know, it's all about how many calls you make per day. Mm. No, it's not. It's about how many quality conversations you have per day. And it's about how many quality conversations you have, period, because it's not just quantity, but it's quality. If I'm having good conversations with people, I'm going to generate more business. So one of my biggest surprises is there hasn't been that much evolution in the sales function. Now, if you look at people selling on-site programs, see people selling national contracts, they're really sophisticated. The sharpest salespeople I've ever met in this industry were national sales reps for major staffing companies. Yeah. They blew me away. I mean, they understood the economics of staffing. They understood their clients' businesses better than their clients understood them. They were really, really good. But in general, we don't see that. Mm. But other surprises in the industry. I'm so still surprised at the number of people that come into this business and think it's easy.
Yeah.
I'm surprised at how complicated it's gotten because I think, when mom and dad got started, it was sort of easy. But if you think about it today, the combination of the technology you need, the recruiting skills you need, the sales abilities you need, the understanding of employment law and staying up to date on all those issues. I mean, just watch ASA Central. Mm-hmm. Look at the conversations. It's so HR technical. Yeah. I think it's surprising to me that we still see so many entrants jumping into this and thinking that it's going to be easy. And, you know, kudos to the survivors.
Right.
They understand that it's not easy and they understand how to grow their businesses. I think those are two of the big trends.
If I gave you a career mulligan or a career do-over, what would you use it on?
Oh, if you give me a mulligan, let's see. So we're looking for David's biggest mistake.
Well, okay. If you want to phrase it like that.
By and large, you know, when it comes to it, my philosophical view of this is I wouldn't be where I am today if I hadn't done dumb things along the way.
Sure.
Yeah, I remember the commencement speaker at graduate school told a long story, which I won't repeat, but it was basically about how this man became one of the most successful people in the world. And his explanation through the long story was it was by gaining experience, which only came from making mistakes. So I wouldn't take back the mistakes I've made. But I think the lesson that I didn't learn, and I still really haven't learned, is, you know, there are really great clients. There are okay clients. And then there are some people that are poisonous to your organization. And my mentality is to want to find a way to make everyone happy and to serve everyone as best we can. And there were times in the past where I ignored my gut. And said yes to things I shouldn't have. And no, I won't name names, but I've only ever dropped an F-bomb on two people on the phone. And these are two of my mistakes, where one individual had us do work, did tens of thousands of dollars of work, refused to pay for it. When we stopped doing work because we weren't being paid, sued us. And then during the we decided to defend ourselves during the deposition phase. We discovered he had taken all of our work and sent it off to India and asked somebody to copy everything we had done so that he wouldn't have to pay us. And it was in his emails.
Yeah.
That was a mistake. And the lesson is, you know, trust your gut.
Yeah.
The other instance is, you know, we're not a big believer. I still believe you do things on a handshake. Mm. We write a contract because you have to write contracts. Mm. I don't spend a lot of time talking to attorneys, thankfully. Yeah. But I had one individual, and on a handshake, we talked about what would be involved in the project we were going to do. And he used that to his advantage to ask for significantly more than we had agreed upon. And when I said, hey, this is beyond the scope, he said, well, then I'm not paying you for anything. And so, you know, I fell victim to trying to be a nice guy. So have I learned lessons? No, I'm sure I'll make the mistake again because it's just in my nature to want to help people. But I have learned to be a little more cynical. So that would be as close to a mulligan as I would take.
All right. We'll allow that. The last two questions I have for you here before we let you off the hook. What's the biggest threat to the staffing industry in the coming year? And what's the biggest opportunity for the staffing industry in the coming year?
Well, there's a couple of threats for the staffing industry. And, you know, you hear a lot of talk about artificial intelligence and robotics and what it's going to do to the workforce. And the last stat I saw was like 30% of jobs being replaced with automation. That's probably a 20-year threat. Now, the threat to the staffing industry is a lot of times those are our jobs that are going to be taken. The, you know, Amazon put in, what, 45,000 robots last year to fill boxes. So if you've got the Amazon contract, okay, those are 45,000 plus temporaries didn't get put to work. And it's probably a multiple of that because those robots are working 24/7 filling boxes. So, you know, we see the automation in automobiles. Okay. Yep. So right now our driver clients can't find drivers. They're in such demand. 5 years from now, 10 years from now, what are those drivers going to do? Where will the staffing opportunities be? And I think for the companies that are able to look into the future and think about how can we find transferable skills from our workforce? How can we help them transition? How can we be candidate first, like I talked about earlier, and really help those people to find their next career? Those companies will do well. But I think it's a big threat to those companies who are sort of really focused on, we do this kind of staffing and that staffing is going to go away or change. The one that comes up a lot is we hear the gig economy. And is it a threat? I think it's a compliment to the staffing industry. If you've tried to hire your own temps, you know how hard it is.
Yeah.
If you've tried to manage your own contingent workforce, you know how hard it is. Having software that enables you to go direct employer to worker sounds great because it's cheaper. But it's not cheaper than a staffing company that spends all their time vetting people, that spends all their time filling the job orders, that does the work for you. But for a staffing company to use an online platform to source talent, maybe with their own online platform, maybe with somebody else's, to use it as talent sourcing or to use it as another service offering in the mix from self-service to full service, I think that's a huge opportunity. And as we look 5, 10, 15 years down the road. And I think 5 years, it's unlikely we're going to see major changes. Companies that provide great service that are smart are going to do well. You know, we are so overdue for a correction in the economy. I ran into Barry Aysen, for those of you who don't know, he's CEO of Staffing Industry Analyst. I ran into him at the Staffing World Conference and I said, Barry, how long do we got? And he looked me square in the eyes and said, 1 year, David. I'm like, oh, I don't want to hear 1 year. I said, okay, well, I hope it's more than 1 year. But, you know, he's right. There's going to be a downturn. We're on this long-term uptrend. And when there's a downturn, the weak players will die in this industry. They do. And that's a threat. If your business is operationally weak, it's a threat. If when you see your clients pulling back, you pull in and say, hey, we're going to cut our sales. We're going to cut our marketing. We're going to become invisible. It's a threat, and it will happen. Typically, you know, 10 to 30% of the staffing industry goes out of business in a recession. It's going to happen, but there's an opportunity in there. How do we use the time now, when it's really good, to get operationally excellent, to build our service processes, to create a marketing system, to create a sales strategy, not just for today, but through the downturn, so we can handle a greater capacity without having more overhead? I think the companies that do that have a great 5-year advantage on those that don't. Over 10 years, it's going to be more about technology. who's going to incorporate technology that really gives them an advantage. As an industry, I won't say we're backwards in technology, but we're not on the leading edge. Mm-hmm. And we don't have to be on the leading edge, but we have to be looking at the leading edge. And again, the AI, the robotics, machine intelligence, how are we going to use that to source people faster, to screen faster? There was a recruiting challenge I read about, I think it was last year, and they had a group of expert recruiters had to go through 6,000 resumes and find candidates for a number of jobs. Mm-hmm. And then they used a machine system to do the same thing. And the candidates, I don't remember how many hours, it might have been a full day, excuse me, that the professional recruiters took, and they found the best candidates. They actually beat the machines in quality. Mm-hmm. But the machines found almost all of the same candidates in 30 seconds.
Yikes.
So if you're a staffing company and thinking about being operationally efficient, and I can bring that technology in, and every time a job order comes in, I can go into my ATS, pull out those candidates in 30 seconds, as opposed to let's write up a job ad, let's put it on Indeed and Career Builder, let's get it out there. Now, we need to use technology to give us a competitive advantage and be so much better than the HR department can be and be so much better than the small business owner can be so we can fill more jobs. Right now, we're 3% of the U.S. workforce. Mm-hmm. Why can't we be 10% of the U.S. workforce? Because flexible labor is not going away.
Right. Before we go, I do want to touch on one thing you kind of mentioned about the getting ready for the recession. Has the industry gotten better at being proactive and as opposed to reactive?
I love to say yes, but I'm going to have to say no. And the reason is right now we're so busy filling job orders. It's impossible to be proactive. If you're a bigger organization and you've got a management structure, that team's going to be proactive. They're going to be looking at the future. But most of the industry, of the 17,000 companies, the majority are still small businesses. Yeah. And the owner is selling. The owner is helping to manage a branch. The owner is filling job orders. They don't have time to be planning for what could happen 2 years from now. But that said, if your wife's your business partner, take that day off a month and do your retreat and make one of the questions, what if? What do we do if business goes down by 10%, 20%, 30%? What if that key account quits tomorrow? What are we going to do? So you start to develop your contingency plans and you start to say also, what do we do today to prevent that from happening?
I think that is a great final note to end on. David, thank you so much. I was looking forward to this. I know this isn't in your wheelhouse, really. Was this as painful as you thought it was going to be, or is it easy?
No, actually, it was a lot of fun.
Okay, good.
I really enjoyed it. So if the audience liked it, I'll be happy to do this again.
Beautiful.
But it was definitely nerve-wracking for me.
All right. Well, hopefully we made it easy for you. David, thank you so much for sharing your secrets of staffing success with us.
All right. Thanks, Todd.
Well, my big thanks there to David Searns, our president and CEO here at Haley Marketing Group. This is usually the time of the show when I give you some big takeaways there. And geez, I may be a little biased here. The man does sign my paychecks, but I think everything he said there was a great takeaway. The one, though, that I would really focus on, and it kind of goes hand in hand with the time of year that we're in right now, coming up to the end of the year and planning for 2018, is that goal setting part. So many times I will ask my clients when I do my end of the year calls with them, what is your goals for the next year? Well, we want to grow. Okay, by how much? No, I don't know. We just want to grow. Well, that's not really a goal. All your goals should be specific. They should be attainable. There should be an easy way to measure them. So when you're starting to think about 2018 here, think specifically. We want to grow our accounting division by 15%. We want to level out our direct hire and our temp division by 50-50. Come up with very specific goals. That way, they're very easy to measure and they're very easy to understand. Did we achieve these goals this year? And do the same thing with your individual marketing tactics as well. Come up with some goals. Instead of just saying, like Dave said, we have clients come to say, well, I want to be on social media because I know I need to be on social media. Okay, that's great. You should be. But what do you want to accomplish on social media? Are you looking to gain more candidates? Are you looking to gain more clients? Are you looking to position yourself as a thought leader? So make sure you have very specific goals for every tactic that you use. And that's going to go a long way towards your success in 2018. Because like David said, we're only about a year away here from another recession. Now is the time to start planning for that. Be proactive. Start thinking, gee, what are we going to do if we lose 20% of our business? What are we going to do if we lose our two biggest clients right now? Get ready for those instances so that yeah, the recession's coming and it's going to be bad, but if you prepare for it, if you're ready for it, if you know the things that you need to do to survive it, you're going to come out golden on the other end. Again, if you'd like to subscribe to this show, just search for us on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or Spotify, or use your podcast app on your Apple device. And check us out at HaleyMarketing.com and on Twitter at HaleyMarketing. Thank you so much for listening to The Secrets of Staffing Success. We'll be back with one more episode here in 2017. We're going to do kind of a best of. We're going to take some clips from all of our past episodes this year and put them into one fun little episode for you. So make sure you stay tuned for that in just a couple weeks. Thank you for listening, and we will talk to you soon.